everybody. Good evening. Welcome to tonight's Molloy program. Thanks for tuning in. Oh, my. I just got this bit from the Times online, Times of the UK, and it's Dateline tomorrow. Gaza crossing points opened as Israel bows to international pressure. It says Israel bowed to international pressure today when it agreed to reopen crossing points into Gaza for everyday goods. The decision was prompted by criticism of its bloody interception of an aid flotilla 2 weeks ago and condemnation of the Gaza blockade by the Red Cross. Tony Blair, Middle East peace envoy, hailed the move as significant after the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu agreed in principle to relax restrictions on goods entering Gaza. It will replace the current narrow list of permitted items with a list of specifically prohibited goods. And it goes on. Well, that's interesting. We will keep you posted as we get more information about that. Henry Waxman's committee, what is it, government oversight or committee, I think, in the House, has received some memos as written evidence in the hearings that Waxman obviously is going to be conducting. And they released some of the information in those memos. And some of the information is that BP, British Petroleum, ignored safety and environmental regulations in favor of quicker and greater profit when they began their Gulf of Mexico explorations, including the Deepwater Horizon that is destroying the southern coast of North America now. And when I heard this today, I thought, well, okay, what's the surprise? I mean, why should any of us, and especially not Henry Waxman, and apparently, I don't know if he was surprised or not. I'm only going on the fact that he couldn't wait to release the information that British Petroleum ignored environmental regulations and safety requirements totally for the sake of quick and easy profit in this Gulf of Mexico exploration. And again, so what's the big surprise? This is what capitalism does. Capitalism and corporatism, if they can see a way to avoid 5 cent expenditure in order to make a 2 cent profit, of course they'll do it. Or a $10 profit. Of course they'll do it. British Petroleum was given the green light by Dick Cheney. The entire energy industry was given the green light by Dick Cheney. Screw the regulations. To hell with the safety requirements. Just go for it, boys. We don't care what you do. Go get the oil. Just don't forget my cut. So I find it not amusing, because amusing, the term amusing doesn't work any longer in these times. I find it unexceptional that internal memos indicate that British Petroleum had made a conscious decision to ignore safety and environmental regulations. I just can't understand why that comes as a surprise. I mean, that's the way it always works. Look at Massey Energy. How many people have died, and how many people have been injured in their mining ventures because they pay zero attention to safety and health regulations and rules and requirements? Well, why is that a surprise? Why is it a surprise that the nuclear industry, which is enjoying sort of a rebirth under the Obama administration, why is it a surprise that they, I mean, come on. Why is it a surprise that chemical manufacturers ignore safety and health requirements and regulations. Why is it a surprise that the pharmaceutical industry ignores safety and health requirements? Why is that a surprise? It should not be. To whom is it a surprise? What Americans still believe that corporate America or capitalist America pays the least bit of attention to this stuff? Come on, folks. It's one thing to be ignorant as a sack full of doorknobs. It's something else again, though, to be utterly and absolutely stupid. After year upon year upon year of these stories coming through. Oh, well, surprise, surprise. British Petroleum decided to ignore everything. Exxon Valdez decided, oh, that's right, they put a drunk at the helm. They decided to ignore everything. Why is this a surprise? The Rand Paul, who would like to be a senator from Kentucky, turns out he's another liar, another political candidate who has no problem lying. Now, a couple of weeks ago in Connecticut, the man, the attorney general running for, is it governor of Connecticut? I think it is. Was caught in a lie or not lie. He has said that he had been a Vietnam veteran. And then he had said that he had not been in Vietnam. He had been. He had not been. That guy couldn't make up his mind. But Rand Paul, who has been calling himself a board-certified ophthalmologist, is a liar. Where is the media outrage about this one? The Associated Press and the Courier Journal in Louisville are reporting this. They say the national panel that approves doctors as board certified said U.S. Senate candidate Rand Paul isn't on the list, even though he has campaigned saying he is. The Louisville Courier Journal reports that the American Board of Medical Specialties, which works with the American Medical Association, doesn't recognize certification by a group that Rand Paul and his wife and his in-laws founded in 1991 and heads. Well, okay, I'm going to declare myself a board-certified talk show host. But my lawyer not. Yes, but I'm going to put together then a board who will certify me. That's pretty easy. Paul says he's certified by the National Board of Ophthalmology, but Lori Bukas, a spokeswoman for the American Board of Medical Specialties, said the organization considers certifications valid only if they're done by the two dozen groups that have its approval and that of the AMA. You know, if you're going to play in the arena, you have to play by the rules. If you want to claim you're board certified, there is certain certification agencies that make you board certified. It's very simple. The American Board of Ophthalmology said Rand Paul hasn't been certified since December 31st, 2005. Paul declined to address the issue to the Louisville Courier Journal, and Paul's campaign did not immediately return a phone message from the AP yesterday. Paul appeared at the Great Eastern National Gun Day show in Louisville on Saturday, and he told the newspaper, "I'm not going to go through all that right now." When asked if he would address the issue, Paul replied, never. What does this have to do with our election? Well, what it has to do with your election, Mr. Rand Paul, is you are a liar. You are a filthy, right-wing, teabagging, racist, freak liar. That's what it has to do with your chunky, cheesy, rinky-dink campaign, punk.
He lies and he lies and he lies. He just lies and he lies and he lies and he lies. He can lie any time, he can lie any place. He crosses his fingers and keeps a straight face. He lies and he lies and he lies. Too many believe him, they're bleating like sheep. Accomplices now in the liar's deceit. He lies and he lies.
seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. The report over the weekend that Afghanistan is chock-a-block with all sorts of wealthy materials, wealthy minerals, generate an awful lot of email response here to me, to this program. And what a lot of people are pointing out, of course, is this has been known for a very long time. This was not some, I don't know how the Times reported this morning because I didn't read, or was it yesterday? But I didn't read the entire article. But this is information that has been known for a very long time. The Soviets, I think, were the ones who first discovered this, Soviet geologists. But in sorting through, you know, wanting to bring this up on the program tonight, sorting through all the different articles that are being reported on this, the one that I found that made the most sense, it's not really an article, but a column, is by our own economic affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, Prairie 2. And at the bottom of this hour, after this next break, I'm going to share it with you. So if you have questions or, you know, even following this and you're thinking, oh, I'd like to know more about that, I'll have it for you. Okay. And it's from Prairie 2. GR, Hopi Engine in Arizona, writes in regarding Israel, Israel's decision to lift some of the embargo on Gaza. GR writes, you think maybe those Iranian ships joining the Gaza relief effort with a detachment of Iranian Marines aboard with escort and support from the Turks, along with a stern warning issued from Iran that any action would be an act of war, you think that might have something to do with Israel's sudden more reasonable, quote-quote, attitude? Someone just blinked. GR in Arizona. Yeah, the Israelis used the Schwarzkopf. Was it Schwarzkopf or Colin Powell's theory of you only go to war, I guess it was Colin Powell's, you only go to war with overwhelming force, a set objective, and a withdrawal point or a disengagement point. But the key to it, of course, is overwhelming force. All this talk about appropriate, what's the term, appropriate response, equivalent response, whatever, which to me is madness. It's just utter madness. No matter if you're a good guy or a bad guy, of course, if you are going to try to defeat someone, you use overwhelming force. To do less is madness. I mean, it's insanity. The whole purpose of sending in your military is to kill and destroy. It's not to build and rescue. It is to kill and destroy. That's the only legitimate function of a military. So if Israel decides to kill 1,200 Gazans in retaliation for the death of three Israelis, three settlers, that makes perfect sense. In terms of military's sole function is to kill and destroy, and you must, if you're going to kill and destroy, you must make sure you can kill and destroy. That's why any adventure in Afghanistan up to this point has failed and will continue to fail. It doesn't make any difference whose military goes in. Because every time this is done, every time Afghanistan, an attempt is made to subdue or subjugate or conquer or occupy Afghanistan, it's done without the stated objective, overwhelming force, and a stated endpoint. You know, when victory is declared. As a matter of fact, I have something here that I'm going to share with you tonight. I haven't done this for a long time. A Kipling, Rudyard Kipling poem. So just prepare yourself. And you know, this is in Cockney dialogue. So I'm not going to try to imitate the Cockney dialogue, but I'm going to try to read what he wrote 100 years ago. Ah. it's just getting strange, isn't it? Is everything getting strange? I think it is. And a little report from South Carolina on the South Carolina Senate Democratic Party. The Democrats are finally figuring out that, yes, voting machines can be rigged. Yes, they do get rigged. Yes, probably every election since electronic voting machines have been used has been rigged. But now that Alvin Green, the South Carolina's Democratic Senate candidate, all of a sudden,
oh, wait a minute, you mean, well, golly, I think something is amiss.
Yeah, we'll get to that, too. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 25 before the hour. Very quickly here, regarding the evidence that is turning up in BP internal documents that Henry Waxman and members of Congress have requested. Now, in theory, once a request comes in from a congressional investigating committee, you're not supposed to destroy anything. Isn't that a knee slapper? Jamie in Maryland writes, Mike, my take on the release of the internal emails and memos showing BP's willful negligence in putting profits over safety is that such documents still exist. You're surprised. A guest on tonight's Countdown said that BP is going out of its way to destroy such evidence. She said that it appears the company is literally removing dead animals along the oil-soaked coast in the overnight hours and deleting online posts, commentaries, and photos conveying firsthand experiences of cleanups, health effects, investigations, and once again, the crippled and dead animals smothered in oil. Jamie in Maryland. Yeah, well, it's capitalism. It's corporatism. They are not the least bit interested in human life or any kind of life. That's not what they're about. All right. Regarding the minerals, this huge cache of minerals, $1 to $4 trillion worth in Afghanistan, that everybody is trying to explain to everybody else for the past 48 hours. Bruce Enberg cuts through with this. In case anybody was wondering why we have been staying in Afghanistan in order to protect our route for a pipeline we will never be able to build, the answer is we weren't. Afghanistan has been long suspected of having potentially huge mineral deposits, and the report from the Pentagon has leaked out. The Pentagon. The New York Times quotes unnamed U.S. government sources that says there are previously unknown deposits of a whole smorgasbord of minerals, including iron, copper, cobalt, gold, plus rare earth and essential industrial metals, including lithium, totaling more than $1 trillion. Some mining sources say its real value is more like $3 trillion. This is on top of publicly known deposits of staggering wealth, including a soon-to-be-developed copper mine in Afghanistan, so big that China bribed the Afghan Minister of Mining $30 million to get the rights to it. China expects revenue of $3 billion. I guess that's per year. The existence of these deposits has apparently been known since the 1980s when mining surveys were done by the Soviets. Original Soviet documents were supposedly uncovered by geologists working in Afghanistan in 2004. Where was the CIA for the previous 20 years? The new estimates are based on follow-up aerial surveys done since then, including the use of sophisticated gravity sensing equipment. Afghanistan has a recent law giving control over and revenues from all mining to the puppet government in Kabul instead of the provinces, or God forbid, the people. The puppet masters pulling the strings on this bit of wealth enhancement for the corporations was the World Bank in Washington, D.C., which provided the legislation verbatim to be rubber-stamped by the Afghan marionette government. These friendly bankers are always happy to race to the aid of a country in need, no matter whether you need money because predatory capitalists have wrecked the economy, or some puppet dictator has the wealth of the nation in his own Swiss bank account, or you've been bombed into the Stone Age by the U.S. for no good reason. You can count on the World Bank to arrange a friendly loan. All they require for you, from you is to turn over to their corporate cronies all your resources from now until eternity, or until your country is just a moonscape of mining waste. Afghanistan has no government infrastructure to control the dumping of hazardous waste. They don't even have the pretense of a minerals management service like the Bush administration provided to protect us from British Petroleum. In other words, Afghanistan is a libertarian paradise. At least it will be once the U.S. mercenaries wipe out those pesky indigenous people. The lithium deposits, lithium like in the batteries, are probably the biggest in the world and more than enough to keep American boys bleeding for years to come. Essential metals, and especially the rare earths with the strange names like niobium, used as an alloy in steel and superconducting magnets, have become the exclusive domain of Chinese miners, primarily because China has been throwing around their vast reserves of U.S. dollars to put producers in the rest of the world out of business. Stocks in companies that use lithium are up sharply. Now that the U.S., not that the U.S. has any use for these metals, since we don't have any factories, but you didn't think the U.S. military was actually fighting for America, did you? The U.S. Marines no longer occupy countries for the benefit of U.S. interests. They work for the transnational corporations. Just as the German Hessian soldiers and the British Redcoats really worked for the British East India Company. They were attempting to put down the revolt of the colonists when they objected to the abuses of the trans-colonial corporations. Democracy was only an afterthought. Now that the little job the U.S. military did for British Petroleum in Iraq is winding down, they do need something to earn their keep, and China needs more niobium. Oh, and by the way, we have vast, undeveloped reserves of rare earths in the U.S., but it's cheaper to mine them elsewhere, if you don't count the Pentagon budget. Two-thirds of corporations, you see, pay zero taxes, so it doesn't cost them a dime. From Bruce Prairie 2, go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. $3 trillion worth of minerals. Does anybody really still think that the libertarians really want the best for America? That corporate America really cares? That capitalism is really about everybody having a good job? Oh my God. Well, anyway, a little bit from Uhuru.com. Uhuru.com. It is a website run by the Congress of the African People's Socialist Party. And you can get all this. You ought to check out this website, Uhuru News, U-H-U-R U. Uhuru. U-H-U-R-U. News.com. It's a pretty amazing website. They even have a, you can listen to Uhuru Radio. It's an astonishing website. Here's a little bit. This is from, Nimble. This is from NC. Let's call this person NC. Thank you for your reporting on Afghanistan. In relation to the BP story, here's a link to an article which sheds some more perspective on the overarching issues involved. The U.S. military is not currently occupying Nigeria, but with AFRICOM, you all know what AFRICOM is, in place, it may be only a matter of time. Excerpts follow the link. And then the writer gives me a link to uhurunews.com. And the story is about Nigeria's agony dwarfs the Gulf oil spill, and the U.S. and Europe simply ignore what's going on in Nigeria. Here's a little excerpt. Forest and farmland were now covered in a sheen of greasy oil. Drinking wells were polluted, and people were distraught. No one knew how much oil had leaked. Chief Promise, village leader of Otuegwi, and our guide said, quote, "We lost our nets, our huts, and fishing pots. This is where we fished and farmed. We have lost our forest. We told Shell Oil of the spill within days, but they did nothing for 6 months," end quote. With 606 oil fields, the Niger Delta supplies 40% of all the crude the United States imports and is the world capital of oil pollution. Life expectancy in its rural communities, half of which have no access to clean water, has fallen to little more than 40 years over the past two generations. Locals blame the oil that pollutes their land and can scarcely believe the contrast with the steps taken by BP and the U.S. government to try to stop the Gulf oil leak and to protect the Louisiana shoreline from pollution. Nimo Abassi, Nigerian head of Friends of the Earth International, said, quote, "We see frantic efforts being made to stop the spill in the U.S., but in Nigeria, oil companies largely ignore their spills, cover them up, and destroy people's livelihood and environments. The Gulf of Mexico spill can be seen as a metaphor for what is happening daily in the oil fields of Nigeria and other parts of Africa," end quote. Shell, which works in partnership with the Nigerian government in the Delta, says that 98% of all its oil spills are caused by vandalism, theft, or sabotage by militants, and only a minimal amount of deteriorating infrastructure. More on this when we come back. It's quite a story. The story is foreign-owned oil gushers in Nigeria dwarfs British Petroleum's oil gusher in the Gulf of Mexico. And the article talks about life expectancy in the Niger Delta. Life expectancy has fallen to little more than 40 years over the past two generations, and the filth and destruction that these oil companies have perpetrated against the people there and its corrupt government. Nigeria has one of the most violent corrupt governments in Africa. So many African countries are that way. Have you noticed that? Anyway, Shell, Royal Dutch Shell, says that 98% of all its oil spills are caused by vandalism, theft, or sabotage by militants, and only a minimal amount by deteriorating infrastructure. And, you know, you just want to scream in laughter or agony with that kind of a statement. Uhuru News, the article says, these claims are highly disputed by communities and environmental watchdog groups. They mostly blame the company's vast network of rusting pipes and storage tanks, corroding pipelines, semi-derelict pumping stations, and old wellheads, as well as tankers and vessels in port that blow out their tanks. There's an overwhelming sense that the big oil companies act as if they're beyond the law. Gee, I wonder why. That's according to Animo Bassi, Nigerian head of Friends of the Earth International. He said, quote, what we conclude from the Gulf of Mexico pollution incident is that the oil companies are out of control. It is clear that BP has been blocking progressive legislation both in the U.S. and here in Nigeria. In Nigeria, they have been living above the law. They are now clearly a danger to the planet. The dangers of this happening again and again are high. They must be taken to the International Court of Justice. And then it goes on and on. And I want to share with you an editor's note at the beginning of this. The article's not that long, but the editor's note from UhuruNews.com, and the article is written by someone named John Vidal. The editor's note is this. The ruling class media have inundated us with information concerning the irresponsible dumping of millions of gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico. Although this is truly an environmental catastrophe, the dumping of oil and the destruction of the environment in Africa by greedy multinational oil corporations like British Petroleum, Shell Oil, and ExxonMobil go virtually unreported by a media that acts as if it is concerned about the environment. This disparity in, quote, reporting, end quote, is indicative of the ruling class media's mission to serve without reservation or shame the interest of, quote, big business, end quote. The ruling class media itself is corporate big business. Its interests lie in not telling the truth or not telling the story at all. On the other hand, governments in Nigeria and in the United States are also at the beck and call of imperialism. Although both governments have Africans as their heads of state, they administer an imperialism that is white power all along the line. That is why fast-talking U.S. President Barack Hussein Obama and pimp-dressing Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan have nothing to say on the matter. They represent imperialism's neocolonial strategy, white power in blackface. As we struggle with the question of the destruction of the environment by the backward forces of imperialism, organizations such as the All African Peoples Development and Empowerment Project must take the lead on how we solve these problems as the revolution defeats imperialism and everything it stands for. It will take all power to the people to clean up the mess imperialism has made and is continuing to make. And finally, we must not allow them to define this dumping of oil in the waterways and into the land and oceans as spills. The misuse of the word spill gives them a psychological damage control advantage. The oil is not spilling into the ocean. It is gushing into the ocean and onto the land. If you get a chance, you should read this. UhuruNews.com. And the title, just John Vidal is the author, V-I-D-A-L. Now, we've talked about this on this program, about now that it has stricken our southern border of North America, all of a sudden, and rightly so, people are screaming their guts out. Now, I heard one moron from southern Alabama on the news today say that we want the federal government just to leave us alone, but just make sure that BP has to stay here. We'll take care of this. Oh, really? And how are you going to do that, Bubala? This immense destruction that is occurring on the southern coast of North America is going to, this is destruction. It is not a spill or a foul up or a mess or an event. It is utter and absolute destruction. If you think, you're listening to this program and you're 15, if you think this is going to come back, this part of the Gulf Coast, in your lifetime, you are mistaken. If you're in your 40s or 50s, don't fool yourself. Please don't fool yourself into thinking, please don't believe the hog snot coming out of the mouths of the BP executives and now the President of the United States, that this is going to be taken care of and restored back to its pristine ecological beauty and balance. It's gone. Do you understand? It's gone. It's just gone. Now, the question is, how do we adapt to that? You know, remember, survival of species depends on adaptation. That's all. Adaptation. We'll be back. Try this because I obviously think it's pertinent to part of what we discuss on this program. Here in the United States of America, except for the families who have members in Afghanistan, nobody really cares in this country about what happens in Afghanistan. The news that $1 to $4 trillion or $1 to $3 trillion worth of natural resources are exploitable is the only thing that has caught the attention of the media in this country here recently. Rudyard Kipling, the British poet who was imperialism's best friend, but in kind of a sardonic way, he certainly was the man behind the British Empire in terms of being a poet. And I'm sure if your education through high school is like mine, you have read plenty of Rudyard Kipling. But if your introduction to Kipling was like mine, you had a teacher there to explain the Cockney slang that is used and the pronunciations. Let me just give you three quick ones before I do this. When he talks about a recruitee, he's talking about somebody newly drafted into the military. When he says fixed bayonets, he's talking about a drink. Fixed bayonet was a drink. And when he talks about a martini, that's a rifle that replaced the old Enfield rifles that the British imperialists used so effectively against the indigenous people. So a martini is a rifle. A recruitee is a newly drafted soldier. And fixed bayonets refers to a drink. You ready? This is The Young British Soldier by Rudyard Kipling. When the ARF-made recruitee goes out to the east, he acts like a babe and he drinks like a beast. And he wonders, because he is frequent deceased, ere he's fit to serve as a soldier of the Queen. Now all you recruitees, what's drafted today, you shut up your rag box and arc to my lay, and I'll sing you a soldier as far as I may, a soldier what's fit for a soldier, fit, fit, fit for a soldier. First, mind you, steer clear the grog sellers' huts, for they sell you fixed bayonets that rots out your guts. Aye, drink, but it eat the live steel from your butts, and it's bad for the young British soldier, bad, bad, bad for the soldier. When the cholera comes, and it will pass to doubt, keep out of the wet and don't go on the shout, for the sickness gets in as the liquor dies out, and it crumbles the young British soldier, crumb, crumb, crumples the soldier. But the worst of your foes is the sun overhead. You must wear your helmet for all that is said. If he finds you uncovered, he'll knock you down dead, and you'll die like a fool of a soldier. A fool, fool, fool of a soldier. If you're cast for fatigue by a sergeant unkind, don't grouse like a woman, nor cracked on, nor blind. Be handy and civil, and then you will find that it's beer for the young British soldier. Beer, beer, beer for the soldier. Now, if you must marry, take care, she is old. A troop sergeant's widow, the nicest, I'm told. For beauty won't help if your rations is cold. Nor love ain't enough for a soldier. It ain't enough, enough, enough for a soldier. If the wife should go wrong with a comrade, be loath to shoot when you catch him. You'll swing on my oath. Make him take her and keep her. That's hell for them both. And you're shut to the curse of a soldier. The curse. Curse, curse of a soldier. When first under fire and you're wishful to duck, don't look nor take heed at the man that is struck. Be thankful you're living and trust to your luck and march to the front like a soldier, to the front, 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 like a soldier. When arf of your bullets fly wide in the ditch, don't call your martini a cross-eyed old bitch. She's human as you are. You treat her as such, and she'll fight for the young British soldier. Fight, fight, fight for the soldier. When shaken their bustles like ladies so fine, the guns of the enemy wheel into line, shoot low at the limbers and don't mind the shine, for noise never startles the soldier, never startles the soldier. If your officer's dead and the sergeants look white, remember, it's ruin to run from a fight. So take open order, lie down, and sit tight, and wait for support like a soldier. Wait, wait, wait like a soldier. And when you're wounded and left on Afghanistan's plains, and the women come out to cut up what remains, just roll to your rifle and blow out your brains and go to your God like a soldier. Go like a soldier of the Queen. It's the last stanza. When you're wounded and left on Afghanistan's plains, and the women come out to cut up what remains, just roll on your rifle and blow out your brains. And go to your God like a soldier. Now keep in mind, Kipling was born in 1865.
I was going to say there were probably previous poems written about wars in Afghanistan etched out on stone tablets in long forgotten languages that no one can read or pronounce anymore or remember, because there has been, in recorded history, no foreign entity that has ever subdued and occupied Afghanistan right. successfully in, what was it, 4,000-5,000 years?
A long time.
You know, you'd think someone would remember that.
Well, yes, you would, wouldn't you? From Greg in Florida, who is a writer there. He sent me this. Mike, I'm putting together a report on the degradation of air quality as a result of the oil in the Gulf. And I'd like to share this information with you. According to several sources, the threat of toxic air may be even worse to Gulf residents than toxic water. It also probably explains why so many cleanup workers are becoming ill. This is a lot of information, even though I have already condensed it for you. You'll probably have to excerpt it if you want to mention it on the air. The effect of the oil on air quality is something that has rarely been talked about in the media by BP or by the government. I have heard unconfirmed rumors that FEMA has evacuation plans for cities along the Gulf Coast. If that is true, then contaminated air blowing ashore is probably the reason. Do you think BP will address this serious health issue? Ha! British Petroleum will not even allow the media to report on oil washing up on beaches. As you have correctly stated so many times, government and corporations are not in the business of protecting our health. Corporations are in the business of making as much money as possible, and government is in the business of making sure corporations make as much money as possible. The health and welfare of the American people does not figure into the equation. Greg. Now, he adds, according to the Institute for Southern Studies, last week, the Louisiana Environmental Action Network released its analysis of air monitoring test results by the Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA's air testing data comes from Venice, Louisiana, a coastal community 75 miles south of New Orleans in Louisiana's Plaquemines Parish. The findings show that levels of airborne chemicals have far exceeded state standards and what's considered safe for human exposure. For instance, hydrogen sulfide has been detected in concentrations more than 100 times greater than the level known to cause physical reactions in people. 100 times greater. Among the health effects of hydrogen sulfide exposure are eye and respiratory irritation, as well as nausea, dizziness, confusion, and headache. But the concentration threshold for people to experience physical symptoms from hydrogen sulfide is about 5 to 10 parts per billion. As recently as last Thursday, the EPA measured levels at 1,000 parts per billion. More on this when we come back. Who's left when the war is won? A soldier of a misfortune, a soldier of an angry call, soldiers on foreign soil. Well, we're not here to fight your war, as we know what you're fighting for.
It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, Greg Patton in Florida, who is who writes for the, I quoted stuff all the time. I usually read it in full. He writes for Orlando newspaper website. Anyway, he's talking about the degradation of the air quality as a result of the what's happened in the Gulf. And he quotes from the Institute for Southern Studies that hydrogen sulfide has been detected at concentrations more than 1,000 times greater, 100, I'm sorry, more than 100 times greater than the level known to cause physical reactions in people. Among the health effects of hydrogen sulfide exposure are eye and respiratory irritation, as well as nausea, dizziness, confusion, and headache. The concentration threshold for people to experience those symptoms is about 5 to 10 parts per billion. As recently as last Thursday, the EPA measured levels at 1,000 parts per billion. The highest levels of airborne hydrogen sulfide measured so far were on May 3rd at 1,192 parts per billion. On May 14th, WWL Television in New Orleans ran a report on the levels of hydrogen sulfide and benzene in the air at that time that confirms the findings of the Institute for Southern Studies. And then Greg includes a chart showing the effects of hydrogen sulfide on humans. From 0 to 10 parts per million, you get irritation of the eyes, nose, and throat. 10 to 50 parts per million, headache, dizziness, nausea, and vomiting. 50 to 200 parts per million, severe respiratory tract irritation, eye irritation, acute conjunctivitis, shock, convulsions, coma, and death in severe cases. That's hydrogen sulfide. Now, they're talking about parts per million. The EPA measured levels at 1,000 parts per billion. So you do the math. Now, here are the health effects of exposure to benzene, which is also in the air in the Gulf Coast. This is from CDC. A major effects of benzene from long-term exposure is on the blood. Long-term exposure means exposure of a year or more. Benzene causes harmful effects on the bone marrow and can cause decrease in red blood cells, leading to anemia. It can also cause excessive bleeding and can affect the immune system, increasing the chance for infection. Some women who breathed high levels of benzene for months had irregular menstrual periods and a decrease in the size of their ovaries. It is not known whether benzene exposure affects the developing fetus in pregnant women or fertility in men. Animal studies have shown low birth weights, delayed bone formation, and bone marrow damage when pregnant animals breathe benzene. The Department of Health and Human Services has determined that benzene causes cancer in humans. Long-term exposure to high levels of benzene in the air can cause leukemia, which is cancer of the blood-forming organs. People who breathe in high levels of benzene may develop the following signs and symptoms within minutes to several hours: drowsiness, dizziness, rapid or irregular heartbeat, headaches, tremors, confusion, unconsciousness, and at very high levels, death. Now, regarding the evacuation stuff that Greg is hearing about, Kate in the desert, who travels down to the Mississippi Gulf Coast to assist. She did after Katrina, and she did during this calamity. She writes, regarding Greg in Florida, there's already rumblings about a 1,000-mile migration to escape the toxic air. Church folks in Kentucky and Missouri are already setting up relief centers. FEMA and law enforcement are putting together contingency plans. Don't have any attribution, just internet radio and guests on late night talk. Not tinfoil hat stuff. Can't deny the possibility. This is so huge and so awful. Okay. And Hog's Breath Jack, Hog's Breath Saloon, if you aren't familiar, is a bar in Key West. As a matter of fact, they have a website, or they did, I don't know if they still do, with three webcams. You can go to, oh, that means you have to leave this show, though. Well, you can go to hogsbreathsaloon.com, I guess. Anyway, Hog's Breath Jack writes, Mike, President Obama today implored Americans to visit southern tourist beaches and munched on local seafood, seeking to boost two key industries threatened by the BP oil disaster. He said, quote, there's still a lot of opportunity for visitors to come down here, end quote. So there you have it, just like the mayor of Amity in the movie Jaws. Come on down. The water is good. The food is fine. Hog's Breath Jack.
no more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Nobody was ever gonna get sized down originally.
It is 25 before the hour. What we also have here tonight is, this the situation over in South Carolina. South Carolina is just in a, it's an asylum. The entire state is an asylum. And the people who are the craziest are the people who are actually, running the asylum. I feel nothing but a lot of, sadness for people who live there, anywhere in South Carolina, unless they live in a situation where they are immune from, any of the, local or county or city politicians. It's just madness. And the national politicians, you know, the Senate, the senators and the representatives. It really is, with a couple of exceptions, it is really just an absolute asylum. But Emily Gooden, writing at thehill.com, has informed us now that Charleston City Councilman and former Judge Vic Rawl, R-A-W-L, has decided he's filing a formal challenge to the results of the race because this guy, Alvin Green, won. I'm sorry, no offense, but Alvin Green is a doofus. I don't know why. I don't know why he's going along. I don't know why he doesn't talk about the white Republican operative who provided him with all the money to do this. Charleston City Councilman Vic Rawl said the strange circumstances surrounding the primary vote prompted his challenge. Alvin, who didn't spend any money on the campaign besides a $10,000 plus filing fee. He had no campaign website. He had nothing. He won the nomination by 18 points. Now, you know this is a scam. You know it is. The state Democratic Party's 92-member executive board will meet Thursday to hear arguments and decide whether to throw out the results. If the state party decides against Councilman Vic Rawl, he could take his case all the way to the state Supreme Court. If they decide for him, then Alvin Green, could file a formal protest of his own. Representative James Clyburn, a Democrat in South Carolina, one of the few sane people in the political structure of that state, said this weekend that the Democratic primary reeked of elephant dung. And he chose elephant dung specifically because that's what you get from Republicans. Clyburn charged last week that Alvin Green was likely a plant in the race. Clyburn said, quote, "I never said he was a Republican plant. I said he was someone's plant. And it turned up after the elections. We found out, as I said earlier, something untoward was going on. I saw the patterns in this," Clyburn said. "I know a Democratic pattern. I know a Republican pattern. And I saw in the Democratic primary elephant dung all over the place." Mr. Green also came to national attention because he was arrested in November and charged with showing obscene photos to a University of South Carolina student. He has not been indicted and declined to comment on the charges when asked about them by TheHill.com. And it really doesn't make any difference what happens in this Democratic race. This is just a joke because Jim DeMint, who's the senator up for re-election, a Republican, is expected to keep his seat. But the point of all this is that maybe the Democratic Party is figuring out that back in December of 2000, when it became apparent that rampant election fraud had occurred in Florida, not touchscreen machines, but punch cards, and they let it go. Remember Al Gore's infamous concession statement. And then in 2004, when it was utterly and absolutely clear that the elections in this country were no longer even in the ballpark of what they are purported to be. A free people freely selecting its leadership. That is so quaint and so old, it just brings tears to your eyes. It just makes you want to, I don't know, sit on the porch and drink mint juleps and sing old spirituals. It's that old, right? Oh, yes, indeed. Georgia in 2004 was the testing ground. Every single precinct in the state of Georgia in the 2004 presidential election had a Diebold touchscreen machine. And once it was very clear that Diebold and ESS and the rest of these companies that owned the software is proprietary software, so nobody's allowed to take a look at it. And we morons in the United States who continue to vote with these things are proving every two years when we troop in for these elections, and even more frequently than that when we use these damnable machines for local elections, we prove over and over and over again that we Americans kicked the idea of representative government down the street years ago. We don't care. We don't care. We have been warned over and over. We've been warned by Brad Friedman. We've been warned by Michael Moore. We've been warned by all sorts of people who investigated. I mean, Brad Friedman has made this his raison d'etre of his entire life. I'm sorry, Brad, I don't mean to make it that strong, but if you go to bradblog.com and just, I don't know, read anything that he's written over the past 5 years, it's all there. It's all there. Greg Palast has been blowing the whistle on this. You take those three people. You take Greg Palast, Brad Friedman, and Michael Moore. And we Americans don't care. We just don't care. It's a charade. It's a game we go through every November election day, every Tuesday, first Tuesday of November, whatever the hell it is. And some of us have wised up and do absentee ballots. You get a written ballot. And even those, you think, well, surely those will be counted. And probably those are. But anyone, including Kathy and me, who continues to vote on a voting machine, an electronic touchscreen voting machine, anyone who does that is a fool. And we made a decision. We are not going to do it. We will lie and say we're not going to be in town on election day. And then to make sure that we're not violating the law, we will leave town. We will drive 10 miles. We'll drive up to Chattanooga, which isn't that far. We'll go into Tennessee on election day. And we won't be here. But I will never again get within spitting distance or sledgehammer distance of one of those machines. So now the Democratic Party in South Carolina is waking up. Oh, wait a second. Tom says Bev Harris as well. Okay, blackboxvoting.com or .org. That's right. Thanks, thanks, Tom. So there have been several people who have tried to warn. And who is the young man who died, Kathy? He was a frequent poster at Democratic Underground. Was it Andy? Maybe somebody will email that to me. Who I think he was the one who actually started the questioning of touchscreen voting. What was his name? The right wing went after him with a vengeance. Somebody will send it to me, I hope. So finally, the Democratic Party in South Carolina is figuring out what several people have been trying to tell them for years. If you participate in what you consider to be voting, quote, quote, on these machines, you're a fool. You're an absolute fool. Okay, moving right along. Oh, I got a letter from Michael, who lives in Mexico, and I just want to get an email. I want to share this with you. And a couple more things. And then, oh, a statement from, remarks from Fidel Castro. And let's see, one more and one more. And then I think we will take some phone calls. But just wait until the break at the top of the hour. Kathy's not going to open the lines until then. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. You know, you can imagine scenes from Mad Max or On the Beach when you stop to think about populations from the Gulf Coast area moving away to get away from this toxic cloud that British Petroleum has delivered to North America. All right, it was Andy Stevenson, the black box voting guy. And Alan writes, Mike, don't forget Mark Crispin Miller and Bob Fratakis. Fratakis? They're tireless foes of electronic voting. Yeah, we had Mark Crispin Miller on several times. Remember back in the day? God, that seems so long ago. Thanks, Alan. Yeah, Andy Stevenson, Mark Crispin Miller, and Bob Fratakis. How soon we file things away in the memory hole, right? All right, this is from Michael in, he writes, Mike, I live in Mexico now. I'm married to a wonderful Mexican woman. I'm probably going to live out my final days down here in the land of slow pace and easy living. My wife and I drive home to Oregon every year or two, and with the situation getting more weird by the minute in Arizona and Texas, I'm apprehensive about subjecting my wife to even stepping on ground in those ass-backward corners of the country. I loved my country. I served my country. I'm a disabled Vietnam vet, and I feel the weight of many of my friends who died in those jungles and took an early end to their life, believing we were serving our country. I have my serious doubts, but that's all in a different era of error. I write because I've driven across the USA numerous times, and with minor exceptions of some of the larger cities in our country, the airwaves are crawling with right-wing poison. Often you can get multiple stations with Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage spewing their venom, or Christian garbage that keeps the ignorant masses in bondage of their own faith. Only in a few larger cities can you get an opposing view, a progressive point of view on anything of substance affecting our ass-backward nation. We are responsible for keeping the people in the dark ages. If we were serious about making our country aware of the rest of the world, the truth in our government, we would address these hillbillies and the lopsided crap that they are forced to eat. If the Democratic Party wanted to spend their money in a way that would brighten the future of this country, the DNC would be spreading Air America, other progressive networks all across America. But we don't, and then we wonder why the rural areas are backward and ignorant. They have only heard the twisted logic of the mind poisoners, Hannity, Savage, Limbaugh, Ingram, etc. It's sad, but it's so damn obvious why. I am ashamed to be an American. Ever since the first day The clown stepped into the White House with his sinister devil spawn, Cheney. I've always felt that my country... I'm ashamed ever since that day. I've always felt like my country has made some huge mistakes in history, but now it's a matter of total shame. We are not the land of the free and all of that crap. We are the land of the corporate master, and we are so ignorant of not only the rest of the world, but of ourselves. We believe we are number one, and we think it's a debate of right and left in politics, but really it's a battle of right and wrong. We must be content with our ignorance because we do nothing about it. We keep a few major metropolitan areas enlightened, but we allow all the so-called red states and most of the rural areas to sink into the dark ages of reason. Just a thought. We could do something about it, but we are too busy putting out fires and trying to hold on to the slim majority of intelligent Americans to keep our nation on the road to the future, and that future isn't looking too bright these days. Keep up the good fight. Sincerely, Michael. And this is from Jeff. Hey, Mike, big surprise, haha, on NPR yesterday. A talking head reports, gee, an economic department within the Pentagon? I suppose the Pentagon felt they could release this tidbit at this juncture of the malaise, seeing as other subjects like the oil rupture in the Gulf keep the minds focused. All of a sudden, they revealed that there are natural resources in Afghanistan worth trillions ready to be mined. Here we go, just like the coal mines in West Virginia, open pit shale mines in Canada and Colombia. Simple equation that Wall Street will jump on right at the perfect moment. The perfect moment means by the warlords, put in a perfect right-wing dictatorship and bada bing, all the slave labor at the beck and call of the multinational corporations. Blow the mountain tops off, dig as many open pit mines as they choose, destroy the water supplies, all the rivers will immediately be polluted and potable. Any union organizers and ecology or green movements will be crushed. Therein lies the sum total of why our youth die in that blank Afghanistan. Actually, before others begin blanking over Afghanistan, it was a beautiful country. Of course, that has been going on since day one, just as was the USA before Whitey demolished it. Bringing democracy to Afghanistan? Please. Do we give a damn here? Of course not. We've been killing organizers all over the world for two centuries. Che Guevara was a classic example. We took care of him. Bada bing. Israel today denounced comments by former Cuban President Fidel Castro, who compared the Israeli treatment of Palestinians to the Nazi extermination of Jews. Castro's remarks were issued by Cuba's diplomatic mission in Geneva amid debate in the 47-nation United Nations Human Rights Council on Israeli action in the Palestinian territories. Castro said, quote, the hatred felt by the state of Israel against the Palestinians is such that they would not hesitate to send the 1.5 million men, women, and children of that country to the crematoria, where millions of Jews of all ages were exterminated by the Nazis. End quote. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Back to, we'll come to your calls in a moment. We have one open line here, 877-996-2556, if you want to join in. Israel denounced comments today by former Cuban President Fidel Castro, who is comparing the Israeli treatment of Palestinians to the Nazi extermination of Jews. This is what Castro said. The hatred felt by the state of Israel against the Palestinians is such that they would not hesitate to send the 1.5 million men, women, and children of that country to the crematoria, where millions of Jews of all ages were exterminated by the Nazis. He went on to say, quote, it would seem that the Fuhrer, Adolf Hitler's swastika, is today's Israelis' banner. Now, these statements were in a series of articles dubbed Reflections in Cuba's media. His remarks were not cited at the council, the Human Rights Council that is meeting. But diplomats said Cuba had sent the comment to other foreign missions in Geneva as well as to journalists. Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman Yigal Palmor said in Jerusalem, quote, with these outrageous comments, Fidel Castro shames his old-time companions and the ideals he always pretended to serve. Che Guevara must be spinning in his grave, end quote. Israel, of course, has long lamented its treatment by the Human Rights Council, which it believes is biased against Israel. Cuba is a member of the Council's bloc of developing countries. On June 2nd, the Geneva-based United Nations Human Rights Council condemned as outrageous Israel's interception of a ship flotilla taking aid to Gaza and the death of 9 activists on board one vessel. And there's more. This is from CBS Mobile. More from Castro. Fidel Castro says the spreading oil slick following the Gulf of Mexico is proof that the world's most powerful governments cannot control large corporations that now dictate the public's destiny. In an opinion piece published by state media in Cuba on Saturday, Castro said the disaster, quote, shows how little governments can do against those who control the capital, the money, who in both the United States and Europe are, due to the economy of our globalized planet, those who decide the destiny of the public. Well, that was sent in by Tom in Minnesota. And an additional Whiskey Tangle Foxtrot on hydrogen sulfide. Jack says, Mike, I didn't catch all of what you mentioned when discussing the information from Greg that talked about hydrogen sulfide tonight, so I don't know if this is relevant to you. However, I think that callers have mentioned the term sour gas, etc., and I don't know the exact circumstances in which that came up, but here's the kicker. The information I saw says that, quote, no, sense of smell becomes rapidly fatigued and cannot be relied upon to warn of the continuing presence of H2S, hydrogen sulfide, end quote. So, Jack writes, workers not knowledgeable of the above effect could be convinced that the problem of what hydrogen sulfide is doing to them, they could be convinced that the problem has gone away and wouldn't even be convinced that they were still in an environment dangerous to them. Yeah, this is horrifying. It really is. This whole thing, this is the outrage and the indignation and the anger and the fear that practically everyone in this country is feeling right now, except the Republicans. They don't care. But all of that negative stuff that we're all feeling, certainly I'm feeling it, and I know you are too. But I think it kind of reflects the self-centeredness. I'm sorry, I claim it. Self-centeredness and selfishness of me and you, people in this country. Because as I shared with you earlier, this report from Nigeria, you know, life expectancy has fallen in that country in the past 20 years. And you can say, well, that's because of murder and mayhem. And no, it's because that probably factors in. But it's because of what these transnational oil companies have done to that country. And the equivalent of a, so far, Gulf oil gusher occurs in so many parts of the world on an annual basis. And nobody cares. We don't care. I mean, when have you or I brought up the Nigerian oil pollution? When have you and I ever talked about what Texaco did in, is it Bolivia or Ecuador? Bolivia, I think. We don't. We just don't talk about it. How long did we bitch and complain about what happened in with the Exxon Valdez in Alaska? But now it is beating the southern coast of North America to death, literally, and there is no way to reverse this. I mean, it's not. We're in what, day 50 of what we're counting now, right? This reminds me of the Iranian hostage crisis. They were our hostages and their crisis. But here we are, day 56, day 57, day 58. And the oil just continues to gush into the Gulf of Mexico. It's becoming, to me, one of those horrific realities. Like all the years of the war perpetrated by the United States against Vietnam. It was always there. I'm going about 40 years, obviously, but it was always there. It was always in the backs of our minds. Always there. Always. I think about the nuclear, the potential for mutual assured destruction that was in the backs of my generation's minds starting when we were in elementary school and did duck and cover drills. But after a while, one just tucks it away. It becomes, I don't know, where does it go? You can't forget that you have 9,000 nuclear bombs targeted on the United States and vice versa on the old Soviet Union. You can't forget that. But one doesn't, it's not right in the frontal lobes. It's tucked down, isn't it? It's thrown way back. How much effort do we put on thinking about depleted uranium in Iraq that we have destroyed that part of the earth? Forget the national boundaries. We have destroyed that part of the earth. And every Christian alive, Orthodox, Catholic, or Protestant, who is not screaming about this, according to their religion, the Garden of Eden is now, soon will be, uninhabitable if you want to have normal births with your spouse. I mean, we just don't, we don't talk about it, do we? We don't talk about this stuff. But now all of a sudden we're talking about it because it's happening here. And I think once again the rest of the world is kind of looking at us like, you arrogant sons of bitches. You arrogant, greedy, self-centered thugs. Now it's your turn.
There is a war between the rich and poor, war
synchronized screaming. It's Mike
There's
Malloy.
A war between the left and right, a war between the black and white, a war between the heart and the evil. What don't you come on to this war?
Past the hour. Regarding the election fraud, I get this from Richard. Mike, listening to you tonight, I must say that I'm disappointed that you did not mention my name along with those fine election activists. I emailed you in April and offered to send you a copy of my new book, Proving Election Fraud, but you never responded. It has been favorably reviewed by Mark Crispin Miller, who is probably the most well-respected activist of all. You can read the review. The link is on your elections forum. The post is Proving Election Fraud, the book. I don't know why you have ignored my emails. I've been the most prolific election fraud analyst on the net over the past 6 years, as evidenced by my posts on your elections forum as Truth Is All. And we have spoken twice on the phone. I was the original DU poster, Democratic Underground poster, who called attention to the 2004 theft 2 days after the election. As a longtime truth seeker, I must say I'm frustrated that you did not respond to my offer to send you a free copy of the book. Your listeners would understand why election fraud is both endemic and systemic if they heard what I had to say. So what is it? Why the cold shoulder? Or am I just paranoid? Still hoping, Richard. I apologize. This is our standard response to people who feel slighted. There are two of us here. And we have a 5-year-old. And I get approximately 300 or 400 emails a day. And I do the best I can. I'm really sorry, Richard. If I didn't respond to your offer of sending me a book, it's simply because I knew I wouldn't have time to read it. I don't know what to do except to tell you the truth. I do apologize for the slight and the oversight. And if you can send me an email with a link to where people can go to, I don't even know what's not, when you say you're in my elections forum, I didn't know we had an elections forum. Do we have an elections forum? We do? Richard and anyone else who's listening, I have no idea what's at that website. I'm not kidding you. I'm not trying to be a smartass here. I don't know what's there. And there's a reason for that, too. I don't go there. I mean, we have a George, our webmaster, takes care of that from, where's George? In New York or someplace?
George is in New York. And I just have to say, Mike's not kidding. he has not probably looked at the message board in.
No.
3 or 4 years.
I just can't. I mean, there's no way I can do it.
He's not being deliberately.
You know, if we were Tom Hartman or Stephanie Miller or one of the other so-called progressive, I say so-called because, a lot of people listening say, well, you're not progressive. But they have a crew. Hartman has a crew. Stephanie has a crew. Bill Press has a crew. We don't. There's two of us here. Two of us. And again, we have a 5-year-old. And she has a life. And there's just stuff. You know, we do the best we can. This program is nowhere near produced the way I wish it could be. No, Kathy, it has nothing to do. We do the best we can. You do the best you can. But you know what I'm talking about. We just don't have the bells and whistles, and the reason we don't is because we don't have the staff, and the reason we don't is because we don't have the money, and the reason we don't is because of the nature of progressive talk. That's just the way it goes. When we come on the air night after night after night, a lot of times we do it. We don't know if there's going to be any money left over at the end of the month or not. That's just the way it is. And I've accepted that. And all the little right-wing trolls can send me emails and say, well, that's because you're no good. You know, I don't give a damn what you people say. I really don't. The fact that you're listening cracks me up. So, Richard, I'm sorry. I apologize. You're not being paranoid. It wasn't because I don't like you or I hate your book or anything of the sort. It's simply because I didn't see it. And you say you and I have talked twice. I have no idea. I have no idea who you are or when we talked. I mean, there are maybe 25 people who email me on a regular basis that I immediately recognize their email addy or their name or you know what they say, and four of those people are regular contributors to the program, in terms of actual written stuff. But again, Richard, I'm sorry, it's nothing personal. You're not being paranoid. As you know, I don't do interviews on this program. And one of the reasons I don't do interviews is just, it's not the nature of this program. Occasionally I'll do something, but it'll be with Brad Friedman or maybe a progressive politician, and that's about it. So I apologize profusely, but I do the best I can. We'll be back after the break. Birth control, we're wanting less to eat. It's Good News Week. Doctors finding many ways of wrapping brains in metal trays to keep us from the heat. It's Good News Week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky. It's Good News Week. Someone's found a way to give the rotting dead a will to live, go on and never die. Have you heard the news? What did it say? Who's won that race? What's the weather like today? What's the weather like today? It's Good News Week.
To all the men out there.
Before the hour, Mike is in Chicago. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. First, I just wanted to explain to Richard, who sent the letter. I've, as you know, been a listener for a long time with you.
Right.
And I think it was about 4 years ago, right after you had Molly, I used to stay in contact with you via email and such, and
right.
You've always been more than hospitable. You always explained, if I don't get back to you, I apologize. And you were doing this when she was a year old, and that was the hardest time for you, you know? And so, for Richard, please don't take it personally. I totally understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, Mike. I'm not trying to come across as a jerk or arrogant or anything of the sort. It's just that when you have a two-person operation like we do, where it's
yeah.
a constant struggle, it's just the reality of what we try to do. We do the best we can. I don't mean to start whining here. I'm not going to do
no.
that. But I just mean we do the best we can.
Yeah. And the Green Mill still wants you to come in for some Jack Daniels.
Boy, I'd love to go back to the Green Mill at least one time.
Yeah.
Man, I miss that place.
Yeah, the reason I was calling anyways is, seeing that Pat Robertson seems to have a one-way line with Jesus, I wanted to send him an email and say, hey Pat, would you ask Jesus next time you talk to him, if he can turn water into wine, could he turn oil into salt water? Is that possible?
Pat has been noticeably
quiet
about this. I mean, surely he can blame this on somebody.
Yeah, he's always good whenever slate wipers happen,
an event like this, surely it's the fault of, the gays? Or maybe it's the fault of the liberals or the progressives?
Yeah.
Or the Jews or the Muslims or somebody?
Yeah. It's unbelievable. And one more thing, I know that you don't have much time, but one more thing, you were talking about the cleanup crew and how they don't have the masks and everything. And you know what it smells like to me so bad is, remember when Christine Todd Whitman told all the rescue workers, go into the puffy white clouds. Don't worry. They won't hurt you. And there's billions of dollars of lawsuits going on to this day.
Sure.
That's the kind of thing that scares me.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, Mike. Talk to you later.
Take care. Appreciate your call. Yeah, he's referring, of course, to Lower Manhattan when Christy Todd Whitman was instructed to tell everybody that the threat was over. Go back to work. Go back to work. Corporate America. Even when the nation has suffered a loss like the collapse of the trade towers and a missile going into the Pentagon, and a jet plane full of people blown out of the sky on the orders of Dick Cheney, even when all that happens, corporate America doesn't, capitalism doesn't miss a beat. Doesn't miss a beat. All right, okay, show's over. Back to work. Let's go. Come on. Hiya. Let's go. Bastards. Sanchez is in Montebello, California. Hey, Sanchez.
From the West Coast to the East Coast, as oil-free, a good evening to you as possible, senor.
Yeah, thank you very much.
It never stops, man.
I know it doesn't. Well, you know, there is a stopping point, and I think we're getting close to it. The stopping point is when these clouds of poisonous vapors come rolling over the southern United States. The temperature here in Atlanta, you know, we're at June 14th.
Right.
We have been having August temperatures here in the North Georgia area, Atlanta. I say Atlanta because that's the behemoth here in North Georgia. The heat index today was 100. We've been having August weather in June.
Yeah.
And this whole thing, whether it's the disaster in the Gulf or the disasters in Nigeria or the disasters here or the wars or the pollution or global climate change. I mean, we're really kind of riding a horse that's already dead. You know what I'm saying, Sanchez?
I understand, man. Like the old Creedence songs used to say, watch out for the rain that's coming, which is exactly where I want to drop in.
Yeah.
Did you happen to hear about Northcom? Last week they were announcing that they're conducting drills in the Gulf of Mexico. So they're probably getting ready for the evacuations, or worse, should something like a hurricane really, really hit, because obviously the storms pick up their energy and water from those now toxic waters. So,
yeah.
I mean, this is obvious. If only anybody would start thinking ahead. I'm just amazed by all the things. If I can just bounce between a couple of different topics.
Sure, go ahead.
The corporate subjugation has become so obvious here, man, in the past couple of weeks, from our president down to the grip that BP seems to have via the police, the security, and the military.
Mm-hmm.
Where are these people going to go as far as the evacuation is concerned? I know people were talking about churches, but, I mean, there are those handy little FEMA camps that are going to be available here. I know, Mike, we're both old enough to remember a grainy black and white footage. Remember of the Russian tanks, the communist tanks that entered Czechoslovakia and Prague back, I think it was 1968 when that happened?
Mm-hmm.
And you have that feeling of helplessness. The tanks, these corporate tanks, have rolled into our country. We just don't realize it yet. I mean, I was watching Anderson Cooper and CNN, and even their reporters, their little corporate minions that usually do their bidding, their beck and call, and even BP and the security offices are batting them away like tiny little flies.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And then this discovery of the minerals in Afghanistan, I mean, it's not a surprise to me, but stop and think about this for a second, man. I mean, how long does it take geologists and all of these people to analyze these grounds? They've known about this for years. It just didn't happen last week.
Right. Well, the reports clearly indicate, and I think Bruce Enberg, our economic affairs correspondent, brought it up, Soviet mineralogists or geologists, whatever the hell they were, figured all this stuff out. 20, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, why it's being reported now as some revelatory event when I don't know. I guess because I had no idea that the Pentagon had a business division. I know the Chinese military does. Most of the toys and garbage that Americans buy at Christmas, you know, junk for their children, is most of it is made by companies that are owned by the Chinese military. And I mean, everything is probably owned by the Chinese military. I had no idea that we had a business division in the Pentagon.
Well, we do now. I mean, go back to James Cameron's film, Avatar, which came out over the Christmas time.
Right.
Afghanistan is Pandora. You saw the flick, right?
Oh, sure.
Okay. The same thing is going on here. I mean, that one mineral that they need, oh, here it is. Boom. They've got it now in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the military is going to be used for. That's what they're there for now, to subjugate the population. But do you really think that Al-Qaeda is going to settle for all of this?
Well, I don't know about Al-Qaeda. I don't even know if that exists, but I will guarantee you that
the Taliban,
these religious, 7th century types, in Afghanistan and Pakistan, they're not going to settle for it. No.
No, of course. We're going to be in a permanent war, just like they were in Avatar, man.
Sure.
So, I was amazed that the truth is happening now.
Yeah, well, and what are we going to do about the truth, Sanchez, except roll over and suck it up?
Well, the last time I called you, I offered a perfect explanation and a reasonable solution, but, it fell on deaf ears.
Yeah, what was that?
Oh, well, basically to take a week off in a public demonstration.
Oh, right.
Of a strike. Like, we're not taking this anymore.
Right, but Americans don't do that. You know,
no.
Europeans still do that.
South Americans do that quite well.
South Asians do that.
Yeah.
Africans do that, but Americans don't do that. We don't do that.
We don't do strikes very well.
But
I mean, the truth is there. The answer is quite obvious, and it's up to the people to get off their asses because, again, look at what BP is doing. Look how they're treating the press. Look how they're treating that region. Look at the damage they've done, and they still have the upper hand on everything here, and it's going to get a hell of a lot worse once these hurricanes
come. Yeah, but Barack Obama's down there kicking ass and taking names, right, Sanchez?
You said ass. Oh, my God. You shouldn't say that. There's little children listening.
I hope not. Hey, Sanchez, I got to go. Thanks.
Have a good one.
All right. Appreciate your call. Yeah, Barack Obama's down there. I saw some video today. I didn't listen to any of it because I'm sick of his rhetoric too. But there he sat, and to his left on this table was this great, enormous white man with white hair. And I looked, and yep, it's Haley Barbour. And you know, Haley Barbour, this the governor of Mississippi, this friend of the citizens' councils, this cluxer, this racist. You know, he's sitting there, and here's this guy. 15, 20 years younger than he, than Haley Barbour, and got darker skin. And Haley Barbour just sitting there thinking to himself, boy, I wish you'd just shut up. Boy, man, I gotta sit here with these cameras. Boy, I just wish, boy, why don't you get out of my face? We know what we're doing downhill in Mississippi. You know that happened, right?
We'll be right back.
before the hour. David is calling from Little Canada, Minnesota.
Hey, Mike, how are you, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing pretty well. I know you probably don't have very much time left here, so I want to talk about Cuba and BP, so I'll make Cuba really short.
Okay.
you know, their greatest export is doctors, and people on the right, some of them are my friends, and I know you're probably mad at me for that, but, you know, they say, you know, there's no wealth. There's no wealth. There's no prosperity. I say, you know, look, there may not be a Donald Trump in Cuba, but it kind of overlooks the fact that there's really no poverty. People are wealth. People can eat. There's access to education, and they have health care, which is not really something you can say here about the good old U.S. of A. But then I want to talk about the whole BP oil spill.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just trying to figure out where the hell the teabaggers are on this one, because if you look at corporate greed, and you talk about how people like you and I are responsible for this, we are. The rest of the world is really pissed at us. They're probably laughing at us right now because they know about all the various warehouses and sweatshops they have in other parts mm-hmm. of the world that are American owned. Indonesia, El Salvador, Burma, a lot of other places. And now they're just kind of sitting there laughing at us. So these teabaggers say, oh man, we got to do something about this. Let the free market play its course. But at the same time, they don't want to interfere with business. So it's like, well, what do you want to do? And this is actually what happens when you don't keep corporations in check. They talk about unchecked government power. What about unchecked corporate power?
Well, yeah.
And you mentioned Afghanistan earlier. I'm pretty sure you heard Tom Hartman's show today.
No.
Well, Afghanistan has the most lithium in the world. It has a lot of lithium.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no wonder we're trying to invade there. Because that's what war is. It's a consolidation of resources.
Right.
They say we got to go to this, we got to go to that. You know, Hitler in World War II said we need to invade the Sudetenland, the Czech-speaking part of German-speaking part of Czechoslovakia. Of course, what he didn't tell the people, because he said we need to annex the German people, they're being oppressed, they're being tortured. Of course, what he didn't talk about is the Sudetenland has a lot of resources.
Mm-hmm.
It had gold. It had silver. It had diamond. It had a lot of things.
Right.
And that's really all war is. People say, no, there's good reasons. No, there's never a good reason. It's all about corporate power. All war is rich white men sending middle class and poor people to die to help them get richer. That's all it's ever been. That's all it ever will be. But these corporatist teabaggers who want a free market, but of course they don't realize that their corporate masters don't want a free market. They want to have their cake and eat it too. And a free market doesn't allow that. A free market won't allow billionaires. They just don't get this. And so now BP is not going to get boycotted. This oil is going to keep spilling. It's going to damage the Gulf. And where are we going to end up?
Well, where we're going to end up is with no Gulf of Mexico. There'll be a body of water there, but it will be dead water and smelly water. And in worst case scenario, we'll wind up with a section of the southern United States that is depopulated.
It'll be worse than the Danube in Yugoslavia. The Danube is just dead now. There's nothing there.
I know.
After what Clinton did over there, it'll be worse than the Danube.
Well, I think that's what we have to look forward to. David, I hope it doesn't turn out that way, but it's looking more and more like it will. David, I have to leave it there. Thank you, sir. Thanks for checking in. Charlie's in Des Moines listening on Sirius. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Mike. That caller earlier, got your slighting them on their email.
Mm-hmm.
That's not in your character. You're there for everybody. I appreciate your show.
Well, thanks, Charlie. Appreciate it.
Yes. Regarding the Gulf, the theory of color is light, and light shines is absorbed in dark colors and reflected in light colors. I'm really concerned with the ocean the Gulf. They're turning darker in color, especially during the hurricane season. That water's going to heat up a lot more, and what they were predicting to be a huge hurricane season could even be an extreme. I mean, it's going to be I believe it's going to be an extreme hurricane season now. And all that that's going to be coming ashore, that's going to reach all the way up to Maine and probably as far west as Ohio off that coastline.
Well, you know, you're doing what I thought couldn't be done. You're scaring the hell out of me.
I know. I hate to say it, but well, I'm a shaman, and my elders have been saying for a good 40 years and now, better than that, that the worst is coming thanks to the two-legged. And put it politically correct, the non-Indians, if you will, that we'll see more hurricanes, more earthquakes, more volcanoes, more droughts, more floods in greater numbers and extreme sizes, and we're seeing it. Have we reached the point of no return? I hate to say it, but I think we have.
Well, I hate to hear that, Charlie, because, you know, I hate to hear it for all the little kids on the planet that have done nothing to deserve this. Little kids all over the place, young people who have and thanks, Charlie, I have to leave it there because we're out of time. Who have the misfortune, all these little kids of coming into a world that 100 or so generations previous to them consciously and determinedly destroyed. And it's I don't know, it's almost too much to think about. And I think that's why a lot of people run around like their hair's on fire talking about, I'm a teabagger. We think Barack Obama was born in, we know he was born in Kenya. I mean, go ahead, amuse yourselves to death, you fools. Go ahead. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are you burdened?